Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. Did I just say hello? What just happened, Bruce? Aloha. My name is Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games, and I am back after a couple of weeks. And obviously rusty because I said hello. That's not a thing I do. To you, my listeners, and you, my actually Hawaiian co-host. So we're talking NXT for October the 4th, 2022, one day after my birthday and 2 days after my birthday pub crawl. Thankfully, not one day after my birthday pub crawl, because I don't know how I would have handled that. You know, I was kind of okay by last night. But, you know, I'm old, and I don't know that I should be handling that much anymore. I'm Kelly Wells. That's me. And we're going to talk about this show. Technology. Sorry, folks. We didn't start this earlier. I don't like fighting with technology. I like it when technology serves me and doesn't give me guff. That's what I want out of technology. I don't want maximum overdrive in my life, Bruce. That's probably the first time anybody's referenced that movie in 20 years. Bruce, who are you?
Aloha from Honolulu. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I am the other reporter for NXT, no longer 2.0, but NXT, with a new aesthetic tonight. And to correct you, Kelly, I am not Hawaiian. I just live in Hawaii, so
just
not native.
No, it works better if I call you Hawaiian. Just accept this, please.
Okay. I'm joking.
The natives would be upset. Then we'll just, you know, call you an expat of Washington or wherever you originally hail from. Okay, so we should probably talk some wrestling at some point. Brawling Brutes versus Pretty Deadly. This for your NXT Tag Team Championships. Marred by the fact that Pretty Deadly can't lose in this situation, one would think, although Solo Sikoa did what he did. But Pretty Deadly defend successfully in 12 minutes and 26 seconds. That is a third of your wrestling minutes on this, a light show from in-ring standpoint, heavy on getting some stuff ready for Halloween Havoc, which I do approve of, 38 minutes and 54 seconds of wrestling on this show. Pretty Deadly wins when Imperium shows up and causes a distraction. Lots of good things going on in NXT right now, but also lots of distractions. Multiple tonight. Pretty Deadly defeat the Brawling Brutes with spilled milk on Ridge Holland, actually, when Imperium causes trouble. Then you get Inoue and Blade and Briggs and Jensen showing up to, you know, look at the champions because they're handsome guys. Or maybe because they want those championships. I guess we'll have to tune in next week, folks, to find out. But Pretty Deadly, still your champions. I thought this was a perfectly decent formula tag. No frills exactly, but I liked this main event, and it sure felt fresh, Bruce.
Yeah, in a kayfabe perspective, what was the scheduled main event if this hadn't happened? Because I just feel like they were scrambling at that point. You would think so on kayfabe, and that's just something that's always come up in these WWE segments where they set up the main event and the opening segment instead of already having a main event set. So that aside, I thought this match was going well until the shenanigans toward the end, especially because with Ridge Holland, you could tell he was really waiting for it because he wasn't actually going for the cover after they hit their finisher. And I think just all that really, another distraction finish in a championship match, no less, just kind of made it seem that you have the fact that this is a team randomly coming to NXT, never having done anything together in NXT, even though both of them started in NXT, and they get a title shot just like that. And we've talked about devaluing titles, and you look at what they did here, and sure, Brawling Brutes is a good team to go against, but What about, you know, Faison Blades or the Briggs and Jensens or the Galluses or even the Dyads and whatnot, who have been there as teams and working? It just, and I get it. You're trying to get a rating. You're trying to help with what was pretty much an A to B show. So it, I understand that, but just storyline-wise, it's kind of iffy. And there was only one option I saw that were pretty deadly caboose conceivably, and that was that they were going to use that as an avenue to move them to SmackDown, just like they did with Solo Sikoa for the most part, where they would kind of challenge or go back and challenge Brawling Brutes, but then end up staying on SmackDown or something like that. But obviously that didn't happen. I think Pretty Deadly as a champion here is good for the tag division. Their expressions after the match to both teams coming out and confronting them were priceless. They're just like, oh, come on. No, come on. We already did this already. You know, they just seem so exasperated. One, having the impromptu match and then going against two teams they've already defeated, as they said. Yuta Sanofe just looking great as he usually does. And does anybody care about Bruce and Jensen? Yeah.
I mean, I think they're a perfectly decent mid-card, slightly lower mid-card main roster act. I think that they're a decent babyface undercard team that isn't going to challenge for championships in this brave new world of lots of championships. I mean, they probably will at some point because who knows how many tag teams will be in the division. But there are an okay number of tag teams right now. But Briggs and Jensen are working main roster shows. There are people who aren't. But Fallon Henley won a match that was untelevised against Dana Brooke. Briggs and Jensen.
Was main event that I read, actually.
Oh, was that main event? And then Briggs and Jensen beat Benjamin and R-Truth?
Yes.
Benjamin
also
and somebody.
Main
okay.
Event.
Also for main event. So, sorry.
Get TV time, actually. And main roster TV time.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think their upside is massive. I don't think we're going to see these guys in WrestleMania Tag Team Championship matches. But I don't know. We're still in year one of Triple H's reign. So I have no idea what to expect. That number to call us is 515-605-9345. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We're going to talk to Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, who has been waiting patiently. Thank you. We figured out all the stuff. Ryan, if you can hear us, say hey.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
All right. That is a relief. I genuinely was half expecting silence and something to have gone wrong with Skype. Lots of new pieces moving in new directions. What did you think tonight, Ryan?
It was a fine show, usually, as always, with NXT.
Yeah, I thought so, too. What really captured you?
Well, what intrigues me is this match between the Creed brother against Damon Kemp in the ambulance match. And my question is about how long this has been going on, this feud between Damon and, I know he's not wrestling Brutus, but, you know, the storyline is more related to Brutus because he has to leave, you know. His brother can't pick up the victory. Does anyone have any footage of the time that Damon Kemp, like, destroyed Brutus in that amateur wrestling match, like, supposedly? According to Damon Kemp, he, like, destroyed him, you know, in competition.
If anybody does, I have not seen it. I would like to. This is for me, like, of all the non-champion, gosh, maybe counting the championship matches, this is what I'm looking forward to the most because I just think they've done so well with it. And to be very, very blunt and open, Julius Creed is my favorite wrestler on this roster. I just think that he really is the complete package, and outside of maybe Carmelo Hayes, he's got the highest upside of anybody on this roster. I just love what he's doing I loved the fire that he showed in his when he was talking to Damon Kemp on the perch. And I thought that Damon Kemp represented a pretty big step forward on the mic as well. So while I haven't seen any of this footage, whether it exists or not, I'm pretty excited for how they put this together. I like that Julius is – I like the awkwardness of him wrestling for Brutus's contract that he could lose and he'd be the one going to the main roster and not Julius, even though I assume they will start out together. I don't know. I also like that we continue to see wildly different personalities from the Creeds when in a lesser era or with lesser booking, you would see them acting the exact same and saying things that sounded like they were written by the same writer, giving them the same personality.
The same inflection and the same tone.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of this is on these guys doing their part as well to create different characters. So I'm all in on this. What's crazy is Duke Hudson losing another match in sub a minute. 51 seconds, Julius Creed beats him with his basement lariat. Kemp, Brutus, Ivy Nile, everybody's involved. Ambulance match coming at you, folks, at Halloween Havoc. So it's going to be a busy show, Bruce.
Yeah, so one, with Duke Hudson, I just appreciate that he's become the big man jobber now in NXT. I think he's perfectly suited for that. For that role because of his size and his ability to take bumps and make other people look good. So, you know, it might not be where he wanted to go, but that's a good formula to have a long career in WWE, so good for him. Julius might not be my favorite wrestler in NXT. That's definitely Carmelo Hayes, but Julius is definitely the top 3 to 5 wrestlers in NXT for me, so I definitely understand where he's coming from there. I think he has tremendous upside, but I still think Carmelo Hayes is who I put my future around. That's not to say you're wrong. I think Julius is a perfectly fine candidate for that, too. He has a little more size, and it always helps that when you're white in this country, so if there's that. So, you know, Julius, and he's grown on the mic a lot, so, you know, he has all those things working for him. The disparate characters that we've seen between the two brothers, where Julius can maintain his rage and Brutus cannot, it's really a stark dichotomy in who they are and how they go about things. Because I said tonight, if Brutus needs to calm down before he has an aneurysm, he is just so intense, just yelling all the time. And while it's a good counter to Julius, it doesn't leave me confident of where he can take characters beyond this, because I just haven't seen much range from him. And maybe they haven't asked for that yet. And this is where he's supposed to do some of that range work. So good for him, I guess, that he's at least differentiating himself from his brother. Like you said, Damon Kemp, I thought his first vignette after the first little promo vignette after turning on the Creed was rough, but the second one I thought was much better. And tonight he just seemed more comfortable out there, even in front of a live crowd and not pre-recorded. That's a big step for him. And yeah, it just, he just sounded genuine in what he said, and it didn't seem forced or put on. And I think that's going to go a long way for him. Now, the stipulation is is unique. I don't remember a stipulation like this where one tag team partner is in a singles match against someone else, and if he loses, then his tag team partner is basically losing Loose Town. So a little twist there that I think it works well because Julius set it up by saying he's his brother's keeper. So they did give you that little lead up to it. I'm interested to see how they end this match, though, because last week with Nate, I said what they could do here is Triple H, Shawn Michaels, SummerSlam, where Julius wins, but then Damon is the one who comes out and just whoops his ass afterwards, after the match, and lays him out so that, you know, they both go over, I guess, in a certain way. Now it'll be a little less believable because he'd have to be able to put him into the ambulance or incapacitate him enough to put him in the ambulance and close the doors. And then he'd have to wait to get beat up from Kemp outside from the ambulance. So I don't know if it would work that way. But again, I'm curious to see how that match finishes.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do here. And I like that a whole lot. Ryan, go ahead.
My second question is on a story that broke about this Rob Fee, I guess is his name, because he's from Marvel. so the work for WWE. Do you think that could impact how Axiom is booked? Because I know he's in pretty serious storyline based on the video package they aired tonight, you know, against Nathan Frazier in this series of matches, but could get more like, say, that take on this supervillain, or maybe gets a sidekick that's like a superhero. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
So I know this name because I'm, let's call me tangentially related to comics. I have seen all of Marvel's, all of the MCU movies. I decided to be a completist a few years ago, said, what the hell, there's not that many. And I watched them all. I read a lot of comics in the 90s during the X-Men boom. Since then, just a few different titles that really I thought were interesting, and that's about it. Otherwise, it's one of those things where you already got a few things you're nerdy about. It's really hard to add another. I would say that this writer most likely knows what world he's in. I don't expect a whole lot of superhero stuff to come out of this Axiom thing that wasn't there before. I think what this guy is really going to do is hopefully be that person who's really taking notes on what has happened, who's feuding and why, when things happen, those kind of things, the kind of thankless backstage jobs where Vince would hire somebody would convince Vince to hire somebody to do that, to really take care of continuity and things like that, which is extremely hard in comics, harder than it is in a wrestling company, even one with multiple branches, because there are so many writers on so many different stories that ostensibly happen in the same world. And so I think that this guy, Fee, hopefully is taking care of our multiverse and making sure that all these things work together in harmony. I'm not expecting a change in, I don't think we'll see a change in tone. I am expecting a benefit to continuity. But I guess we'll find out, Bruce.
So from what I've read and have been told, or correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't he also done work in horror?
That sounds right. But I only saw this right before the show went on, and I was getting the recap. Yeah.
So from what I was being told and what I've read, he also has work in horror, and that he has been or will be a part of the stuff they're doing with White Rabbit, which people are assuming and has been reported to be the Fiend. I keep saying it's Justin Gabriel in the White Rabbit costume, but no one believes me. So I think that more than likely they're going to have him work with Raw and SmackDown as opposed to NXT. When it comes to Axiom, whatever they've been doing with him and the comic graphics, they need to just keep doing what they're doing because it's working perfectly for me. The only other avenue I see with him going down kind of the superhero storyline is if he turns heel and becomes a supervillain, quote-unquote, and how that manifests. But beyond that, I think what they're doing with Axiom right now in the graphics and his vignette tonight, I think they're hitting all the right marks. Nothing's fantastic, but it's all little steps towards building him to becoming a legitimized, credible wrestler to NXT.
Yeah, I'm liking the progression of this too, and I like that they added some sizzle to the best of three, and looking forward to not being the one to recap it. So there you go. So Ryan, go ahead.
Okay, another question I have is on this tag team match with the ladies, Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark being Toxic Attraction. Did you realize Nikita Lyons was a child actor and is still doing movies now?
I'd rather not have to know more about her than I already do.
I've already, like, I've seen some stuff from reality shows she appeared on. the Rachel DeLisle thing. I'm stunned sometimes at who works in the business and how somebody can get continued work despite showing no aptitude for it. I've been in and around the business for long enough that I'm just done to see when this happens. And so this match, okay, Zoe and Nikita win. Of course, Nikita has still never lost on this show, singles or tag. You knew this would happen. Toxic
wow.
Attraction have been near the championship for quite a while, and you knew that they were going to kind of not be in the picture anymore. This was the only other long match of the show, 10 minutes and 26 seconds, although four of those minutes were split screen. During the commercial, I know Nikita had at least one awkward moment, and I still think her finisher is real trash. For as good as it sounds on paper, it just doesn't look like it hurts. But it's the double whammy where it could hurt, even though it doesn't really look like a lot of impact. I don't think it's a good finisher. But if somebody who looks like that can do the splits, I understand you want to have them do it. So, yes, your number one contenders, Stark and Lyons, on a night where we actually saw a really, I thought, the best segment we've ever seen of Kaden and Katana. That sit-down taped earlier thing that really gave them both stronger personalities that weren't just, like, basic gassing each other up and then sometimes bullying their heel opponents. I thought they came off great here. Just a team you absolutely want to root for, with slightly differing personalities, both of them easy to relate to. Loved this scene. Thank you for this scene. Would have taken it before they won the championship, but better late than never. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how people respond to this tag team championship match. I thought the fans were relatively gone for the second half of this show tonight, but they really left during this match. And I don't know why that is. I don't see a lot in the Nikita Lyons act, but if they didn't gimmick the voting, then it seems like she's popular and there should be more of a reaction to her than there routinely is. But maybe this seemed like kind of a throwaway match because Toxic Attraction's been there so much and Zoe and Nikita are just kind of thrown together. I don't know why, but a show that consistently has almost an annoying amount of din from the audience, it was really quiet during this one, Bruce.
So this match, it wasn't that good. There were a couple of things. There were spots in Nikita Lyons that definitely were, the timing was a bit off, and you could tell. Her gear was almost the same color as Zoe Stark's, but it wasn't. It was a different shade, which just like it's not that hard. You're almost there, just there. And I just don't understand why you go from what I've been calling dope finisher for Zoe Stark, that like twisting, flipping, feast your eyes kind of, to then have Nikita Lyons land her finisher, which looks like nothing, and have that be the thing that wins your match. But you know, a homie said, it may look dumb, but if a fire hydrant fell on my gut, I ain't getting up if you count to 12. So take that for what it's worth. Kaden Carter and Katana Chance, once this video started, I tweeted, holy hell, actual character development for these two? And that's what we got. You saw the differences in their character. Casey's effervescent, just uber positive, while Kaden is that one who takes no BS and just is going to get in your face. And they played off each other well in this video. And like you said, been a tag team for how long now? 2 years at least? And this is the first time we've actually gotten more about them beyond, I did American Ninja Warrior. I used to cosplay as Scorpion from Mortal Kombat. We have bright flashy lights and we do flips. Like, this is actual stuff that tells us who they are. But again, like you said, it should have been done before they became champions, because we should have understand who they are as champions already. better late than never, like you said. I just hope for more of this stuff moving forward for these two, because while I might not be the biggest fan of Chance in particular, they have caught on with the crowd very much so from the beginning, and a lot of the fans really enjoy them. And if they keep doing more and more of this, then eventually they might win people over, like me, who I don't dislike them, but I'm not overly enthusiastic about them. So direction here, more of this needs to happen. And yeah, the championship match should be interesting, because the Kayden Carter, like I said last week in her match against Lyons, she seems too quick for Lyons, while Chance might be just fast enough for Lyons to keep up and work through things. But Zoe Stark and Carter are really the only ones that I would trust to call and work a PLE, light PLE level tag team championship match, because this is going to be their first tag team defense in that kind of magnitude. I know they had a short defense not too long ago, but one of this magnitude. So it's going to be interesting, like you said, how it's received and which team will be the face, because, like you said, a lot of people for some reason seem to like Lyons, whereas most of the fans also like Carter and Chance. So I would think the bigger woman would lean heel in the match, but we'll see what happens. It could be a double turn for all we know.
Yeah, I guess there could be something in here. I would have said for sure that Chance and Carter were going to work slightly heel in this match, just because they've done a lot of that. But then they gave us this scene today.
Uh-huh.
And now I don't think so anymore. Ryan, go ahead if you got one more.
Final question is on Braun Breaker. Heard a rumor he went out on a date with Cora Jade, and I don't know if that's a long-term thing or just like a fling he has, but do you think that could be brought into the TV show, like any storyline into that?
I would heavily suggest not to do that. It did happen. Cora was not so coy about it on her Instagram story. Had his name, had a heart, had all that stuff going on. Unless she was just messing with people for some reason that I can't even fathom. I think that she is just a love-struck youth who had apparently moved on from Blake Christian and the former, what did they call him there, Trey Baxter? Blake Christian on other shows. It seems to have happened. I don't know yet, and nor do I know if they are making anything public about that being common knowledge. But if Braun can get it, then he should, I guess. I forget I said that. Let's just
if she can get it, then she should.
Sure. Yeah, job security. So, yeah, I don't know for sure that this is a real thing, but you got young people full of chemicals in the same spot. This kind of thing happens way more than we ever hear about. I have no doubt. I know it was Ryback who, like, I know he's everybody's favorite podcaster. But when some of the stuff came out with Paige, he said, "Hey man, I got news for you. Wrestlers, like, they get it on with each other a lot, and you don't hear about most of it. Just promise me. I'm just promise you, it's definitely happening. And why would
it's
it
like
not?
Like Olympic Village, just in WWE or forever.
Yeah, it's, you know, and they're going all over the nation, but they're essentially isolated anyway. You're in the same small group. I mean, I was in the same theater department for 4 years, and I promise you, it's a thing. So,
well, and why wouldn't you? You're all uber athletic, in shape, muscular for the most part. Even if you aren't, everyone has different tastes and styles. So, I mean, it's like a smorgasbord for all your different desires, I guess. So, why wouldn't you indulge?
You can sample all the meats of the cultural stew.
Exactly.
Didn't know we were going to be able to talk about that today. Too late. I don't know if this is an ongoing thing. These are young people, and I would probably bet against anything long term because that's kind of negative Nancy I am. Anything for the Bruce, or did we cover it?
I do think it's been a bit more of an ongoing thing because I think I saw something a month or two ago at least that had them. But these things in NXT, and, you know, as you said, just in wrestling and overall, tend to be fleeting. The Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae's, the Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, those aren't as, you know, the Montez Ford, Bianca Belair, those aren't as common as people think. So I would highly, like Kelly said, I would suggest against putting them on TV like that. I would, even married couples, I normally would hesitate to put them on screen together. It also doesn't help that Braun Breaker is ostensibly a heel or a face while Cora Jade is a heel. So unless they have the same alignment if they're still together, and even then, I still wouldn't recommend it.
And for me, the main reason I don't recommend it, even despite the fact that they, like, even setting aside that they could break up, which has happened in storylines, in like WCW, I know what happened, stuff like that can happen.
Sure, that with the whole time too.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan and Woman, it happened. The other reason is once you do that on TV, it's really hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube. I know it's wrestling and you can retcon anything you want, but once you open that can of worms, you have to keep them apart for a long time if you want to pretend it never happened, kind of like they do with Becky and Seth.
I mean, but that was still brought up last night on Raw.
Yeah, and I'm just, what are you gaining from, like, just thinking about this flamboyant heel and a badass baby face just at home puttering around having their morning coffee. Kind of like, I'm not asking for a return to kayfabe, but let us believe, folks. So we thank you as always, Ryan. And we're going to go on and talk about a few other matches. And if we must, the Waller effect. how long can I put that off? Okay. Your opening match.
Emails?
What's that?
Until you read the emails.
Yeah, sure. Opening match, Oro Mensah against Carmelo Hayes, 534. Nice little match, this. no surprise. Oro Mensah didn't break out a lot of crazy stuff, but everything he did was crisp and clean, and it looked good. And you're going to want to do that against Carmelo Hayes because everything he does is certainly going to look crisp and clean. And he goes over here. I like that they have these matches, like this little mini preview of our five-man ladder match, which has four men as of now. Hayes over Mensah, and they didn't really linger here. This was kind of to continue putting Carmelo Hayes over as the favorite until Wesley wins, of course. And then he stayed at ringside. And then jumped on what was now a four-person booth, hanging out, talking about Andre Chase versus Von Wagner, mostly using the time to put himself over. But Von Wagner goes over in 3:35 in a match where I thought, I think Andre Chase's offense is pretty good, but how much can you believe it against Von Wagner? Because he got the majority of it. And then it took a distraction to have Andre Chase lose this match. Remind me who distracted him.
Mr. Stone. Well,
Mr.
and Thea
Stone.
Hale.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Mr. Stone. Thea Hale got a body slam in on Mr. Stone, which was fun. And Andre just straight up stopped paying attention to the opponent that he had dominated. Wagner gets this moment. Finally, the giant man is able to squash the bug with lots and lots of help from outside. And one of the announcers go, an impressive victory. And I'm like, no, the hell, it was not. It was not an impressive victory. He snatched victory from the jaws of defeat thanks to many, many other people. But they're going to say what they're going to say. I like when there's one monster exactly one, especially in a, but two is also fun in a ladder match. I really do. So I approve of Von Wagner being there. Interested to see what killer spot he will be involved in where the other guy is taking a massive bump. And he mostly just has to be the guy who handled them at the beginning. So you're opening two matches, Bruce.
Yeah, Mensa, the former Oliver Carter in NXT UK. If you watched him there, he was always smooth, always good in the ring, always had a bit of character to him. Like Kelly said, nothing here was over the top, but he showed that he can do all the little things you need to do in a wrestling match that would make you, if not be a star, then be someone who is around for 10 to 15 years and on TV consistently working matches, even if you are the one putting people over. I don't know if that's meant in the future, but he's someone who, for lack of a better term, carpenter, I guess you can say, with a little more flair, but he can bust it out, and he will moving forward. But I think this is just a good way to whet the appetite of viewers who might not know him as much, who didn't watch UK. Of course, Hayes looked good. Williams looked fine. I like the – when Hayes came out, it was really the first time to see the new graphics, the lower thirds, and they looked pretty sleek and clean with the black, gold, and white sort of color scheme to them, and the arena lighting looked good, and I think it really helped set the stage for this match. And the opening match was what you want an opening match to be. Staying around for the second match, last week I said that it's obvious Von Wagner's going to win because the other two people right now that are scheduled to be in the match are smaller men, and I had predicted back when the first match happened that the third match was going to end up being the very last qualifying match for the North American Championship ladder match. And lo and behold, that's what it will be next week. So you need that one big body, whether it's the Big Show or Bobby Lashley or whoever it might be. That's what Von Wagner's role is going to be here. He's definitely not going to win the match. So as you said, what is the spot that they're going to do? I'm guessing all four are getting up on him and take him out somehow. What will it be? Will it be a standard powerbomb through the ladder on the outside or something more interesting? Is Hayes going to hit some kind of top rope move? Is Axel going to hit or Nathan Frazer, whoever wins, Nathan Frazer? Are they going to hit some top rope move through a ladder? That's the most interesting aspect to me with Von Wagner. I mean, forgot to mention that Thea Hale also put Robert Stone in the electric chair, but he got down, then got body slammed. It was pretty interesting. Pretty fun moment, though. It took away from the match because, again, another distraction. So I think the field for this ladder match is setting up quite nicely and should have a lot of moments that fans will be talking about, just like the very first North American Championship ladder match.
Yeah, Von Wagner could probably dart Wesley into about the 14th row. So hopefully there will be some control because he could definitely do that if he so desired. Late in the show, Hank Walker is hanging out with security, who are all psyched that he's going to have, I think this is his first match as a quote-unquote official member of NXT. I love that Quincy Elliott walks into frame and they all in unison go, Quincy! Like, this group of like blue-collar dudes working security would be that overjoyed at the appearance of Quincy Elliott. I loved it. I loved how silly it was. And then they bring that into the match afterwards. Hank Walker faces Zion Quinn, who goes over Hank Walker in 2 minutes and 14 seconds, which I approve of. I don't see a high card future for Hank Walker at all, but I think that, I don't know. I think they got to be in a weird position because we haven't seen anything quite like this in kind of a while. And I just don't know, where do you take this character? I really, really don't know where you take Hank Walker when he doesn't really look like a wrestler. His whole thing is that he's an outsider. So if he starts getting high up on the card, is the thing that draws people to him suddenly gone? right now, I'm sure they're happy to just ride the wave because he is getting these great responses, even though he's not much of a wrestler. But
that's the worst Dez press I've ever seen tonight.
It is really bad. And I'm thinking of somebody who's got a bad one every single time, and I can't remember who it is, but maybe I will. But, afterwards, Zion Quinn wants to continue the beatdown. Quincy Elliott makes the save. Hank Walker, I think, went for a fist bump. Quincy Elliott gave him the good old smack on the ass. And for now, I think odd coupling these two is probably the single best use I can think of for Hank Walker. Because seeing this good old boy thrown into a situation where he does not understand the other person, even though he's trying to be cool about it, actually might be some fairly decent lower mid-card comedy TV, Bruce.
Yeah, so the only reason I'm riding the Hank train right now is just because it's a fun little story. And sometimes in wrestling, you just need a fun little story. Pearl was the one who tweeted that Hank looks like Daryl from The Office and Seth Rogen, kind of combined. So that's a bit interesting. I think a good comparison, though, for him in a sport context, because he has that everyman quality, going to your question about what happens if he moves up the card, do people still react to him in that way, would be Roy Nelson, otherwise known as Big Country, former mixed martial artist, UFC fighter and whatnot. He had the big belly. He would rub it. He would pat it. He had the big beard and the mullet. He was the quote-unquote everyman, which really just means every white man. But he had that fan favoritism, I guess, even when he wasn't doing well or even when he went up against better people, just because they somehow saw themselves in him, right? I could drink beer with that guy, yada, yada, yada. I think that's kind of the not aesthetic. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess character that Hank is right now, and people kind of respond.
The I could drink beer with that guy is the entire reason Gerard Butler has a career.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I was kind of worried at this match because I was like, oh, they're trusting Zion Quinn already to lead a match against someone who's very green, albeit a short match. But it went better than I thought it would, considering the people in the ring, because Quinn's never really been the one to lead, and he's usually on the losing side of these of matches. So for him to be the one here to call the match, I think, or maybe they planned it out too, but to be the one to still lead the match, I think was a risky call, but it paid off. Walker had a bad Dez press. It was very bad, but I think what they're doing here is working with the crowd, because if you're an everyman security guard, you shouldn't have a good Dez press, right? Dez press. So, and then Shawn, on the way to the ring, Wade Barrett said that Shawn Michaels actually signed him to a full-time contract as a competitor. So the storyline now, although we know he's been training, and if you watch Level Up or if you listen to Thomas' podcast, bonus point, you know that he has been working matches at Level Up, but on NXT proper, now he has a storyline reason to be competing in the ring. And I think so that's a good way of shoring it up, but I think they need to remind viewers for the next 2 or 3 weeks about that fact, just so those who may not have seen it today or who may not have heard it or just skipped their mind tonight, remember that fact moving forward. Where he goes from here, no idea. The odd coupling is good. Quincy is a fan favorite as well. So this could be just one of those odd couple tag teams that turns into potential tag team champions. Though I think it'd be more like they get a surprise shot or a surprise victory over established tag team somehow, and that's the end of it kind of thing. But I think it's a good way to introduce both these characters. While they had Quincy do a singles match not too long ago, 2 weeks ago maybe, I think maybe going with the tag team here is better for both of them because they both are pretty green still.
So Joe Casey and Cameron Grimes are still feuding, still going on. The hoodie guy, a few weeks ago, he showed up on a week that I was recapping, And I said, this might be a reveal down the road, or it just might be that they didn't want people to think about who this person was and they just wanted this for the scene. Obviously, this is going to be a reveal. Schism took the hoodie guy to task because he wasn't gaining enough followers. And then later on, the hoodie guy just stood there all sullen, which got Cameron Grimes to show up and try to pump him up and say, you don't need them. And of course, the schism then attacked him. And then they acted like the hoodie guy had really, really pulled off this amazing, brilliant scheme. Like literally all they did was they pretended to mock him and make fun of him, which brought, like, if anything, it was their scheme. This was dopey, but I am excited to see who, who's under the mask. I don't know if this is going to be somebody that we know that that has been working matches outside of a mask and, is going to be doing this or what. I mean, it's Dante Chen. We both knew when to slip in it. Nothing else makes sense. And I'm still holding out hope that he is both members of the Dyad. But now that we've seen him unmasked, that might not be true. Yeah, it's – I just want to get this match in the rearview mirror. I really do. But if something comes of this hoodie guy, then I guess that's something, Bruce.
I wanted to get this feud in this rearview mirror about 3 months ago, but that's beyond the point now. So I forgot who they showed arriving to the arena earlier in the night, but in the foreground before they panned over to the SUV, you could see the guy
Waller,
in the red.
Yep.
Waller, before Waller came up, yeah, you could see him with the smiley face buttons trying to get them out to people, and to Grayson Waller. So they set that up there, and then that was the setup for Dyad, or Schism, to scream at him and say he wasn't doing his job well, which then led to the attack later when Cameron Grimes tried to why is he inserting himself into other people's – beyond the point. I joked that I was going to tell my kids this is the Four Horsemen, but obviously that's not the case. Here, the other person it could be, of course, is Dante Chen's old partner, Guru Raj, though I don't think it's going to be him. Other people on Twitter said it could be Hornswoggle, it could be Shane McMahon. All up and down. It could be Husky Harris, for all I know. The Ryback. But
less Husky Harris.
Hey, it's gonna be Ramblin' Rabbit. That's what it's gonna be. My concern here is this group is already defined down to. I don't really take them serious. Person going to be someone that adds legitimacy to their group, or is it just going to be someone that adds to the what's the word I'm looking for?
Low rent feel.
Yeah, just I don't the unseriousness that I get from this group. So this reveal, and honestly, I think the better reveal would be if this is the person that actually is the one who's been controlling Schism. I think that would be a better reveal than having Gacy be the leader, because he does nothing for me as a leader. And I think that might be the only way to save this, if the person they reveal is someone that can be the leader. Like, I'm trying to think if there's any NXT UK talent that I can't think of anybody. I'm hoping what they do is that this person is the actual leader behind everything going on with Gacy, but I doubt that's got to be the plan, and it's got to be a subordinate, which means it's probably not going to be someone that makes a difference to me, which is unfortunate because, you know, Fowler and Reed, they're really good, and I just haven't liked what they've been doing since they became part of Gacy's group.
Maybe it's Mei Ying.
Maybe she'll wake up from her dreams and nightmares and become Mei Ying.
Yeah, her dreams, my nightmares. Let's transfer to Wendy Chu versus Lash Legend.
What a nice transition there, Kelly.
Almost as if I planned it that way. 3 minutes and 48 seconds. I thought this was Lash's best TV match. She hasn't been problematic. She hasn't looked dangerous. She hasn't been overly clunky, but nothing was as crisp and as clean as it was today. I thought this looked really good. They're not giving her a whole lot of minutes yet, and that's fine. And she does the job here to Wendy Chu, and this is apropos of nothing. Like, nothing came of this for either wrestler. It was just thrown out there, essentially cold, and then Wendy went over, and we moved on to the next scene. But I really thought that, Legend has worked with more polished wrestlers than Wendy and not gotten this good of a match out of it because she wasn't ready for that then, but she got sharpened by wrestlers like Alba Fire, and now she's out there having a good match with Wendy Chu, who's gotten really very good as well. It's just thrown out there cold, so there's not a lot more to say to it than that, but it sounds like you agree with me on Lash's match here.
Yeah, I don't really have anything negative to say here. I guess I wouldn't, if it would have gone 5 minutes, I wouldn't have minded just to see how well Legend carried through the last couple of minutes of that match, but she did fine. Too cold, because they had built this up last week with Legend, I think, attacked Chu, and then there was some backstage segment with Mitchell or Kincaid, I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. I watched that last week at like 3 in the morning, so it didn't all register.
But even then, they didn't remind you of it here, which I think you should have done. Just a quick, 10-second, 20-second video recap of what happened last week. I don't think that happened. I could have missed it, but I don't think that happened tonight. So that they could have done that. But, yeah, Legend looked good. She has been putting people over in her matches in the last few months, which is the good right call, as she learns. And it seems like, her character on screen is one of extreme arrogance, confidence, and takes no BS. I haven't heard anything negative about her in terms of outside the ring or behind in the training center and whatnot. And it seems like she is really taking to the experience and the feedback she's getting, because as you said, she keeps improving, and she's at the point now where these short matches, I trust her in these shorter matches now to have a perfectly decent match. And it's just seeing how much more she can go, how much longer she can go in the ring and make these matches still work. Because I think what they see in her, obviously, is future women's champion material. And if she's going to be that, then she needs to keep improving as she is. And she only started, a year ago, a year and a half ago? It's been a pretty gradual but steady rise for her. And excited to see where she goes. I do think this feud will end at Halloween Havoc. Not sure if there's going to be a stip related or added onto that match, as it seems like most of these matches at Halloween Havoc will have stips. But that's where I think this feud does end. And I don't think Legend goes over, but I think she will have her best showing at Halloween Havoc.
Sangha hung out in the back with Nathan Fraser, mostly so we could show off the hilarious difference in their sizes. But Sangha was kindly, Uncle Sangha was pumping up Nathan Fraser for his match next week with Axiom. Fraser takes off, and in walks Veer Mahan and his former Indushare partner. They have been teaming on house shows. I don't think any of their matches have made TV, but they're back together, and this time their mission is to show off the freshest fits in the company, because these dudes can dress. Yeah, so I don't know what more to expect from this, but I'm glad they came face-to-face. We also got Wes Lee did a scene. Stax showed up and said, "We know how to make things look like an accident." I like when they keep talking about the murder on screen. It's fun. But you know deep in your heart that what you did to Tony was on purpose, trying to get into his head. I actually like that quite a bit. Interviewer was Kelly Kincaid. I thought she was fine enough. Mackenzie's really kind of on another level. She really is. But I think Kelly was fine here. And then we also got a scene with her later with Bron Breakker, and Javier Bernal showed up. What a mismatch in terms of star power this is. It just looks like whatever.
Big body hobby, huh? I can tell.
It's going to be – I thought Bron was great in this scene.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought this was Bron at his absolute best, because Bernal's just being his poking pride and self. Said, you lost it in a triple threat last time. Why'd you do this one? And I thought Bron's line that they gave him was wonderful, and it was – I mean, if you're grading on the Steiner scale, this was a 12 out of 10 in in delivery. He said, I got into the first one because of my temper. I got into this one because of my pride. But your stupidity got you into your next singles match with me next week. Loved it. Love this line and like this scene. Anything on those pieces of backstage business?
I was actually surprised to see Stax on TV with D'Angelo's injury. Now, the word is his injury isn't as significant as they initially thought, but Stax hasn't really done anything beyond being partnered with D'Angelo, and I think it would be a good time, if they do keep him on TV, it'd be a good time for him to start developing as a personality and more as a singles wrestler. And it looks like that's the route they're going with him here. Now, Wesley also attacked Carmelo Hayes after the second match with Von Wagner as he was at commentary, or after the match, while he was still on commentary, and they had to be separated. As Carmelo Hayes kind of retreated up the ramp as the refs held Wesley back. So there was a lot of stuff happening with Wesley tonight. Stax, I think, as you said, the line about bringing up the murder is still stupid, but I think he delivered his stuff well and seemed rightfully indignant at what he perceives to be a purposeful injury to his boss. So that worked well. Like you said, Breakker worked fine in his backstage segment with Kincaid and Bernal. He just seemed like that just seemed like the Breakker you would see when you're talking to him outside of wrestling. And I think that is better for him than the one who's always yelling and always trying to outdo his uncle on the mic. So I think if he kind of does a blending of the two, then it'll do much better for him moving forward.
Remember when the family had 7 members on TV and now they have 1? Unbelievable. Stax, the last man standing. Who had money on Stax? I did not. All right. Gallus. They're Gallus boys is what they are.
On top.
Yeah. Ilya Dragunov and JD McDonagh got brief but nice segments. I really liked Ilya's very. I just really like it in general, and I'm gonna like everything he does. But I like the intensity here. My wife didn't make it through the show this time because she had stuff to do, but she loved Pretty Deadly in the first scene. She just really likes their act, period, and really liked their ways of being annoying. And we have gotten to the point where we do have to talk about the Waller effect. They're asking a lot of Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez. Let me say this. They lingered a lot when there was stuff going on behind the girls. They lingered a lot on Roxanne Perez and Jade and Cora Jade having to essentially kind of not exactly. I mean, they're not ad-libbing because they're not saying anything, but kind of doing little moments that aren't meant to be the core of the scene. I was absolutely certain that Roxanne Perez was going to break character. I feel like I saw her get close, but she didn't. But yeah, they asked Grayson Waller to keep this scene humming along, but I mean, they put 2 people out there in a versus talk segment,
and neither are ready for that.
Yeah, this isn't Def Jam New York. They're not going out there Is that what they called it? Def Jam? No, what was the name of that game?
Vendetta.
Vendetta. God, New York. That's a place. Vendetta's a thing. Okay. I played this game.
I think they were both, to be fair. I think both. But Vendetta's the one that's more...
That's the recognized one.
Yes, the recognized one that's held in high regard because of its gameplay, its storyline. I think people regard that as the one that really changed how fighting, not fighting games overall, but how that type of game is produced and made moving forward.
This is how much I wanted to talk about this segment. We are instead talking about a video game that came out 15 years ago. Anything on our mid-show talk segment main event?
I saw videos for McDonough and Dragunov were well done. I will say, so on my report last week, I noted that Dick Joseph didn't say any of the moves for Ilya Dragunov. And a reader noted that since the invasion by Russia and Ukraine, they changed his music and stopped calling his finisher Torpedo Moscow. But then if you notice in the video tonight, he called himself the Tsar multiple times. And I'm not sure if they really are trying to make a hard break from the Russian character or not, because even though they changed his music, it still sounds Eastern European enough to associate with Russia. And then calling himself the Tsar, which is usually associated with Russia as well, but beyond that, I think the videos are done well. Dragging off those little bits of information that tells you why he has issues, not just with Breaker because he wants the title, but also with McDonough for being the one who takes credit for breaking his ankle. So I think those were done well and are helping to build up these characters who people might not know as well because they're K. What was the one before the Waller effect you were talking about?
Let's see. I've crossed everything off of my list. I think I talked about those two guys. And, oh, I mentioned Pretty Deadly in the opening scene.
Oh, yeah. Of course. How could I forget? They were so hilarious. And, they came out looking like King George from Hamilton. And they gave their address. And I think calling NXT the Commonwealth was hilarious. And, they're very polished. I'm not saying that they're done evolving and growing. Their floor is already much higher than a lot of acts, not just in NXT, but in WWE overall. But their ceiling is also high. So whatever they do, they just know exactly what their characters call for. And I'm looking forward to how this act translates once they do move on to Raw or SmackDown. The one negative about tonight was that they are the champion, and yet they did not get the full entrance for their match tonight. They came back and they were already on the turnbuckle and they went to the slow-mo. So that to me was a bit off because I would try to make sure the champion is always getting their entrance. We'll understand that there is an importance to them as champion, but that's a slight nitpick for me.
And I think they probably would get it in a show where they were less featured in another way.
Sure.
It almost seems like an entrance is, like if you have to cut any entrances, like the one where the team's already getting a huge hype segment, I guess makes a little bit of sense. Although I'd like to see the champion center as well.
Yeah.
This is from JB from Detroit. While I almost find myself at the very least liking whatever Grayson Waller is doing, I thought tonight he stepped a little too far over the line. His purpose in this talking segment should have been to get Roxy, Cora, and their Halloween Havoc match over, but I felt as though he was overshadowing them and interrupting them far too often. I get his purpose is to be a heel, but there is always a time, place, and level for heel obnoxiousness, and I felt the balance was off in that segment. Also, I feel as though this Waller versus Cruz feud is dragging on a bit too long for my liking. Finally, I love the contrast between the Brawling Brutes and Pretty Deadly. That juxtaposition alone made for a very entertaining match. Yeah, I thought that Waller got close to saving the scene. I really did. I don't think that he interrupted too much. I think he did it the proper amount, and he did it when the girls were just not taking it anywhere new.
And I thought that's why he was out there. I thought he was out there to kind of direct traffic. And if well enough, that could be because you're asking a lot of him in this scene between two very young performers who haven't done a lot of this, and they're trying to build a feud that is meant to be one of the central ones of this entire brand. I did not take any issue with what Waller is doing here. In fact, his reveals are really the only things that got any response from the crowd in this segment. There really wasn't much else that did. Waller and Cruz feud going on a bit too long for your liking. I can kind of dig that. I'm down for a long feud, but this is a feud I keep forgetting is going on.
It's not Grimes Gacy.
Yes, if this was any longer, it would be Grimes Gacy. I will say that. Anything else on JB's email?
Yeah, I realize I forgot to talk about the Waller effect. I agree with you that Waller was kind of the glue that held everything together here, because they were trying, the two were trying hard, but it just, the chemistry didn't seem to be there in terms of the mic work between them. And when Waller kept yelling about being interrupted, I was like, oh, Grayson Waller must feel like every woman must feel in every conversation they have with any man. So I thought that was, I think that was kind of the point as well for him to be that obnoxious about it, because of the role reversal. Not just because of the gender roles, but also because Waller is usually the one interrupting people, even on his own talk show. So I think that was done well, even if they didn't have the subtle gender discourse in mind. The role reversal in terms of the characters, I think, was worked well. And again, Waller was the only person there that kept me interested. So pick your poison. It's going to be interesting to see who they choose, because whoever Jay chooses then will be kind of signaled to the fans as a heel, whereas Perez, of course, whoever she picks will be signaled as a face. Does that mean they're going to stick with that, or will Cora Jade pick someone tall and big, like, you know, Nikita Lyons was always Stark because of the size difference, or Perez pick, you know, Perez or Stark, or Stark or Lyons because of the size difference with Cora Jade? Or will it be more along the disposition? So, you know, maybe Lash Legend for Roxanne Perez. And
they said
whatnot.
It's wide open to to the entire roster.
That
the
opens
main
things
roster.
Up a lot.
I mean, this could definitely be like your bi-yearly use of Tamina as an actual giant.
Well, and then if you want one of them to lose, which I think in this case you'd want Roxanne Perez to lose so the heel thinks they have one over. This could be how, even though I think they're faces right now, you could bring Raquel Gonzalez back down to have a match. Or you could have Roxanne be the one to bring Raquel Rodriguez now back to NXT for a match. So, yeah, there are more possibilities like that. I think with Tamina, it always comes down to her health. Is she able to put in a match right now like that? It's her back that, you know, has been giving her issues over the past decade. But there are plenty of women that you could bring Dana Brooke back down. She's already doing matches with Fallon Henley. You could bring her down for an NXT match.
I think I got what I want to see.
Sure.
You bring Roxanne has her match first, and Cora Jade has brought down Raquel Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And it's, well, Rodriguez. And it's hard fought. Raquel ends up going over. And Jade is just having a swell time, laughing it up, and her match is next. And Raquel turns from Roxanne to Cora because she's been contacted by both of them to be the opponent.
Right.
And then she slaughters Cora Jade as well. So you could do it that way and actually put sizzle on this, even though they're both losing. Like, I'm not some big Raquel fan, but I think that would be a wonderful use of her.
Well, and that way, you know, she doesn't kind of lose her face dynamic on SmackDown
right.
with her partner. Yeah, that would be good. I think what they could do here, too, to try and make Roxanne seem like a smart baby face in this regard is they could film a scene where Raquel tells her that Cora Jade asked her to be the one. So Roxanne says, all right, how about this? You be my pick. My match is going first. You already know that. how about you hit me quickly with your finisher, and then 1, 2, 3. So it's not too, doesn't look like it's thrown too much. And then you have that scene happen with Jade and Rodriguez, but then you have, but then Perez like, but I want you to then, maybe she like pays her or something and says, you can go ahead and I know it kind of sounds shady, but then she really lays it to Cora Jade. I think there, or, you know, you have, if it's not Raquel Rodriguez, you could bring someone else down who is a heel and do that with Cora Jade. So I think the opportunities are there, but you, that is a good option because Rodriguez has a connection, and also wouldn't be, you know, quote unquote, wasting two talents for these pick your poison matches.
Our other email is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well, and happy birthday, Kelly. Overall, I thought tonight's episode was solid. Halloween Havoc storylines are coming along, and some of the new talents are getting some time to shine. Not sure I like Duke Hudson getting squashed or the schmazzy but totally expected finish of the main event. But despite all of that, most of the action was hard-hitting. That said, I have two questions to lay in front of you. Number one, where is this Diamond Mine story going, and did you think they are telling a good story? And number two, how did you like the new commentary team? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Yes, they are telling a good story with Diamond Mine. What a weird, long, strange trip it's been for that group. members that never even got to TV before they were fired in the mass exodus. One or two that were winning, like
they're not even getting rid of
Tyler Rust had won his. Yeah. What a weird story that all the ones that are essentially feuding, none of them are the original members, not one. And I don't know what's going on with Roddy. They said, ran him out of here. Like he's gone. And maybe he is. And if he is, and I'm late on that, whatever. But I didn't go out looking to see whether Roddy was still there. I think they're telling a very good story with them. And I'm very interested. I'll say this. That's the match that I'm most engaged with the outcome at this coming show. I'm most excited about that one. And how did I like the new commentary team? Let's put it this way. I didn't mention them, so I must not have disliked them. I don't know yet if it was blandly inoffensive or if it was actually good. It usually takes me some time to adjust to a new team, but I will say that I have not adjusted to Vic because he's not good, and him not being there removed every reason I had to talk about, well, he managed to mispronounce these seven things and not call these wrestlers finishers or transition moves or anything at all. So I didn't feel that happened, but I also don't know that either of the others stepped forward. Byron is who he is. Like, I already knew who he was. Like, I had forgotten until that moment that he was one of the two who sat in. That's how much I think of Byron Saxton. But I think he's a perfectly fine announcer just doing his thing. And then the other one I would have to hear more to really form a stronger opinion of him. Because I guess tonight nothing stood out particularly good or bad. But if it's not standing out as bad, that's usually a sign for me that it's at least somewhat good, Bruce.
Moon over the moon songs. I just have to do that for you, Kelly. Yeah, so basically, no Vic Joseph, that's a plus. What's his name? Sulu Shah, he called finishers tonight. He called moves. He didn't try and overstep his bounds. He wasn't dressed like a 30-year-old bus rider. Yeah, he, again, there wasn't anything that stood out as negative, which usually happens at least once or twice a week with Vic. So in terms of the commentary tonight, you know, Byron's Byron, Wade is Wade, he still did his shtick. I would prefer to have a two-person booth over a three-person booth for NXT, probably something they just tried out. They made a joke that customs wouldn't clear Vic Joseph, wherever they were. Were they in the UK or Canada? They were in Canada last week, I think. So, whatever. Good. Good for them. I think you put in your report on a serious note, I'm glad or something like that. So
I said Wade jokingly said that he was glad that he didn't get through immigration. I unjokingly agree.
Yeah. So that's on the commentary team. The Diamond Mine thing, I think they've been telling the story well, considering, again, the if they ever did a Dark Side of the Ring or something on Diamond Mine, just in general, and the story of how the team formed and then imploded and then came together again with random parts that weren't even there to begin with, it'd be an interesting journey, because Roddy Strong was the only one who was there in the beginning, and yet he's not even a part of TV with them anymore, and talked about as if he's written off TV for good. So in that regard, they've done well. Brian's earlier question talked about how long has this story been going on. It's been going on since Damon Kemp first made a TV appearance, which was months ago, because he's been plotting this basically since the beginning when they didn't accept him. And they kept blaming Roddy for all the things that he was doing, that as any, you know, when we watch TV or you watch Law and Order or whatever, any serial killer or serial rapist or whatever, when they don't get the credit for quote unquote their work, then they do things to make sure they become the ones known for that. That's kind of what Damon Kemp did here. So it kind of goes in line with how he's developed as a heel too, but it's been going on for that long, you know, however long ago his TV appearance was. That's basically how long the story has been playing out. Now, was this story set when he first debuted? I highly doubt that. But they just kind of went with it and worked with it and found this path, and it's gone well. And as you said, Kelly, the North American Championship ladder match is the one I'm looking forward to the most, but the one I'm most invested in is this match between Kemp and Julius Creed.
Yeah, I'll agree on both counts. There you go. Why does there have to be two of us if we agree on everything? We wouldn't make much of a wrestling commentary team in Vince's world. All right, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Bruce.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Ah, wow. Wow. And you can find me on Twitter at B_Z253.
All right. And we will see you in 7, folks. And Nate will probably be back. Cheers. Painless. How long did we go?
Hour 15-ish? Hour 20? How you doing, Kelly?
78 minutes. Is not the kind of extra content that I'm. Let me end the episode.
Right.